Chapter 13, Spreading Prosperity and Equality. At the end of World War II, hundreds of thousands of North Carolinians came home to make new and better lives. Two of them were Terry Sanford and Bill Friday. Sanford had grown up in Laurinburg in Scotland County. Friday was raised in Dallas in Gaston County. Both had families that had struggled to get through the Great Depression. Both had been among the first in their families to go to college, Sanford to UNC, Friday to State College. Both had served in the war, Sanford as a paratrooper in Europe, Friday at a munitions dump in Virginia. To make their lives better, each went to law school on scholarships provided by the GI Bill, one of the federal government's programs to give veterans a way to find good careers. Terry and Bill, and their wives, Margaret Rose and Ida, lived above and below each other in a duplex just north of the Chapel Hill campus. From there, they went on to achieve things for themselves and others that still affect the daily lives of all North Carolinians. After quickly rising to prominence in the 1950s, Sanford and Friday became the best-known leaders of the state into the 1970s. Sanford practiced law in Fayetteville, then became governor in the 1960s. As governor, he worked to expand opportunities in business, education, and civil rights. Sanford later led the effort that turned Duke University into a world-class school. Friday never left Chapel Hill. In 1956, he became the president of a university that he grew into 16 campuses spanning the state. Under Friday, North Carolina became nationally respected for its approach to higher education. Most of all, both men worked to give state residents a chance to better themselves, whether it was to gain a vocation or develop a career. This was a legacy of the hard lessons North Carolinians had learned about themselves during the 1930s and 1940s. As the Daily Tar Heel, the UNC campus newspaper, announced in 1945, a great future is everywhere evident. The Sanfords, the Fridays, and others like them spent their lives making that great future possible for others. The result was North Carolina's emergence as one of the notable places to live in the modern United States. While Sanford was governor, the National Geographic magazine called North Carolina a Dixie Dynamo. Section 1. The Politics of Reform and Reaction. As you read, look for the beginnings of the civil rights movement in the state, education reforms, the leaders who helped North Carolina move forward, and the following terms: civil rights, separate but equal concept, integration, North Carolina Fund, and community college system. Young people like the Sanfords and the Fridays had a hero, a North Carolinian known across the state for the help he gave to young people and the disadvantaged. Frank Porter Graham's Scots-Irish ancestors had been among the first to go to school in colonial Mecklenburg County. He was appointed president of the university in 1930 by Governor O. Max Gardner. For 20 years, he worked to make education better and more affordable at Chapel Hill, State College, and Woman's College in Greensboro, UNCG. The students who graduated from these schools often went back to their hometowns to be lawyers, doctors, and teachers. They talked about Dr. Frank the rest of their lives. He had criticized segregation. He had treated his African-American chauffeur with respect. He had openly criticized business when it refused to even talk with labor unions. After being the university's president, Graham helped the United States establish the United Nations. In 1949, he was appointed to fill a vacancy in the U.S. Senate. When it came time, however, to win the next election, Graham lost, in part because many North Carolinians were more conservative than the liberal Dr. Frank. Graham's loss in 1950 showed that once again, just like in every other period of its history, North Carolina was a divided state. After World War II, some North Carolinians wanted to continue the ideas of the New Deal, to extend more benefits and opportunities to more citizens. They wanted the state government to push those ideas and to pay for them. Others, however, did not want government changing society as rapidly. This division grew in the state in the years after the war. By the time Terry Sanford was elected governor in 1960, it resulted in the kind of sectionalism found in the state before the Civil War. In this case, the East continued to vote for more liberal Democrats, but the West increasingly voted for more conservative Republicans. Carr Scott and Rural Roads. During the Great Depression and World War II, the associates of the Shelby dynasty ran the state government. From a base at the Sir Walter Raleigh Hotel in downtown Raleigh, the state's Democratic leaders chose agreeable candidates and won elections. One, Thad Ure of Hertford County, was elected Secretary of State in 1936. He eventually served 50 years, the longest term of service for any North Carolinian ever, in one office. In 1948, Carr Scott, a cigar-chomping dairy farmer from Alamance County, beat the Shelby dynasty and became governor. Scott, who often went campaigning in the same shoes he wore on the farm, challenged the state's industrial leadership to spend more money for education and to pave rural roads to help farmers get out of the mud. Scott urged the state to go forward in the manner of the New Deal. The people of the state agreed and passed a referendum that raised special taxes for rural roads. Scott used state government to influence power companies to string lines along the paved rural roads. He did the same with the telephone companies. Scott also reached beyond the usual old white men to help run the state. He appointed Susie Sharp as the first female Superior Court judge, and he named the first black man to the State Board of Education. From segregation to integration. Scott's Go Forward spirit spread services and opportunities to more North Carolinians than ever before. However, after his term, the state became more cautious about change. The Democrats who followed him slowed the pace. This was in part caused by national developments in civil rights, the rights of citizens. During the Great Depression, thousands of Southern black families had moved to northern cities in the Great Migration to seek better jobs. In the North, they could more easily register to vote, and their children went to integrated schools. As blacks became more prosperous in the North, they began to vote for New Deal leaders. They also pressured the federal government to end segregation in the South. In particular, civil rights advocates wanted black children to go to the same schools as whites. North Carolina and most other Southern states had passed Jim Crow laws that separated the races in public places. In 1896, the U.S. Supreme Court had agreed with those laws by creating the separate but equal concept in its ruling in Plessy v. Ferguson. It ruled that states could require separate facilities for African Americans if those facilities were equal to those used by whites. Those facilities were rarely equal. In 1954, the Supreme Court reversed itself in the Brown v. Board of Education case. It ruled that the separate but equal concept was never really applied in the South. It ordered the integration of Southern schools to give black children equal opportunities. Integration is the process of bringing different groups, races, into society as equals. In 1955, the Supreme Court ruled in Brown II that states should integrate their schools with all deliberate speed. Unlike Virginia, where the state closed many public schools to keep blacks out, North Carolina took what it called a moderate course. In 1956, the largely white voting population approved the Pearsall Plan, named for Edgecombe County legislator Thomas J. Pearsall. The plan allowed each of the individual school systems in the state to integrate on an independent basis. The plan also called for freedom of choice, which meant that parents could apply to have their child go to any school. Yet each case was to be handled individually. This ended up slowing, rather than speeding up, the integration of schools. In 1957, only a few blacks had been accepted to white high schools. During these years, the state government worked to keep North Carolina as calm as possible because the state was making major efforts to get outsiders to invest and create new jobs. Sanford, Civil Rights, and Education. Terry Sanford rose quickly to the leadership of the Democratic Party and the state after graduating from law school. He tied himself closely to Carr Scott and ran for governor in 1956. He lost, in part because the state was so involved in stopping the implementation of the Brown decision. In 1960, Sanford won the governor's chair, although the western half of the state voted for his Republican opponent over concerns about civil rights. Sanford was as young as Charles B. Aycock had been when he took office. Like Aycock, Sanford concerned himself with advancing the interests of both black and white citizens, but in a dramatically different direction. He invited black supporters to attend his victory rally and, when he was governor, visited both white and black schools. Like Aycock, Sanford moved boldly. In 1963, he supported the creation of the North Carolina Fund, which was designed to seek out the poor and help them become self-respecting and self-supporting. The fund, which operated for 5 years, helped the rural black farm families of the East as well as the inhabitants of Mountain Coves. The money came from wealthy donors inside and outside of the state. Sanford also convinced the General Assembly to create the community college system. During the 1950s, many counties had set up industrial schools to train workers to use the new technology developed during the World Wars. Sanford's plan took these schools and, like Aycock, provided equalization across the state. This way, citizens seeking advancement had more opportunities regardless of where they lived. Working with his old schoolmate Bill Friday, Sanford expanded access to higher education. The schools that had been started as two-year colleges in Wilmington, Charlotte, and Asheville joined Woman's College in becoming campuses of the University of North Carolina. The new North Carolina School of the Arts in Winston-Salem was later included in the university system, as were the old Appalachian, Western Carolina, and East Carolina normal schools. After the Civil Rights Movement, the African American institutions at Greensboro, Fayetteville, Winston-Salem, and Elizabeth City were made part of the system. Pembroke, the Sandhill School first set up for the Lumbee, was another addition to the system. During this time, tuition was kept quite low, which allowed thousands of North Carolina families to seek higher education for all their children. To address the growing civil rights movement, Sanford set up good neighbor councils in every significant town. The councils were made up of leaders of each race, so people familiar with each other could continue the moderate course on which the state had come to pride itself. To pay for all the changes, the General Assembly widened the sales tax set up during the Great Depression. The greatest impact came in the taxing of food for the first time. Sanford's critics, who would later nickname him Taxum Terry, pointed out that the very people the programs were designed to help had to pay for them with more of their incomes than did the rich and better off. However, Sanford's defenders pointed out that more and more of the state's revenues were coming from income taxes because the post-war prosperity of the state generally raised salaries and wages.